Hello, this is Fight Back, a podcast by the Healthcare Consumer Rights Foundation. I'm Steve Poisner, healthcare consumer advocate, founder and executive director. Our nonprofit's mission is to help you navigate the complex healthcare system and understand your legal rights, options, and opportunities when you encounter problems and obstacles. We want to empower you with the information you need to fight back and get the best possible care. On this episode of Fight Back, we will discuss the health and safety of student athletes in high school and college. We welcome our special guest, Adriana Contreras. Adriana is an assistant coach on the swim team at UC Davis, a senior group coach for the DART swimming team, a former assistant swimming coach at the University of the Pacific, head swimming coach at St. Francis High School, and a certified professional and college Division I soccer referee. We discuss how parents should communicate with their children's coaches and doctors to create a healthy sporting experience for their kids. The mental health challenges brought on by high-pressure athletics, including the lessons learned from Simone Biles and her Olympic experiences. What student athletes should know about the rules and regulations around performance-enhancing drugs and supplements, and much more. Let's get started. Adriana Contreras, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So, Adriana, the now that you know schools are getting back into full swing and kids have been really anxious to get back into some athletic activities, what a good time to inform our listeners about youth sports and health and wellness of student athletes. How important do you think physical activity is in athletic play? How important is that for kids these days from your point of view?
Yeah, so I think we see a number of benefits to physical activity for kids that are developing. You know, we see stuff from the physical side as well as the mental health side. So on the physical health side, you're going to see, you know, we can take a look at obesity prevalence. We can, amongst youth, you know, it's 13% for really, really young ones, 2 to 5 years old, 20%-ish from 6 to 11. So your middle school kids, and then 21% for your 12 to 18 year olds. So, you know, keeping them moving and keeping them exercising is going to be really helpful in fighting part of those obesity statistics. You're looking at good heart and lung health with physical activity, and then obviously some musculoskeletal health as well from just being active. On the mental health side, we actually see a ton of benefits. Exercise, we've seen, has helped reduce anxiety, depression, and like just bad moods, which you see from kids who are growing and really active anyways. So exercise helps to kind of get those endorphins flowing. It has also created sharper memory and thinking for kids as they navigate the school day. It helps them feel a little bit more confident. They tend to sleep better. So the list goes on and on.
Right.
But clearly you can kind of see there's a lot of benefits from staying active, and whether that's an organized sport or, you know, just keeping moving, it's really important.
And what about just being a part of a team and, you know, learning how to work well with others, you know, team leadership, competition, how to deal with competition? What about that whole aspect?
Yeah, so I think this is something so many of us can relate to, especially coming out of COVID. Being at home and alone for so many people was difficult. Youth and adults alike struggled with being isolated. And so I think now more than ever, people can recognize the importance of belonging to a community and belonging to a network and having your people around you, and finding that group that surrounds you and supports you is so, so important. As far as like the life lessons that kids learn from sport, time management, how to handle pressure, because that is a learned skill, and being able to present those opportunities at a young age help them later in life. Communication, accountability, so many benefits from sports we see carry over into work life and life outside of sport. And you can typically identify those in the workforce who have some sort of athletic background versus, you know, people who might struggle with, you know, performance anxieties when they're getting up to give a speech, or, you know, all these applicable things that people do in work, these kids can learn through sport. So I think we definitely are seeing the benefits of being part of a community and a team and a network. And then the life skills, pre-COVID, post-COVID, like those don't go away. So being able to learn that through a game is really cool for our kids.
Right. You mentioned, you know, learning how to deal with stress and pressure. Of course, that's super important. When have you seen it, you know, go too far? You know, when, you know, parents or coaches or schools, do you see the situation about when people put too much pressure on kids?
Yeah. So I think too much might be like a relative term, right? Each kid is going to be different and each family is going to be able to deal with different levels of pressure, right? And just like any type of exercise, each body is going to react differently. And the same goes for that pressure. And so I think when we're looking at what might be too much or where that edge might be, I think teachers, coaches, parents need to look at what type of support they're providing to their athlete, right? If we take a kid and we throw them off the deep end, per se, and give them no tools to survive, of course, they're going to feel in over their head no matter how, quote unquote, shallow the pool is, right? If with no support, with no directions, they're going to feel overwhelmed. But if we slowly give them a little bit more, and we continue to add that support and continue to add tools to their toolbox, eventually they build up to being able to deal with massive amounts of pressure. But again, we have to look at how often we're adding this stimulus, how often we're providing support and giving them something to fall back on or a hand to reach out to, right? Kids don't learn things by just being dropped in. They learn from their environment. They learn from the resources they're given. They learn from behavior that's modeled, right? So all of those things kind of play into that level of too much, I would say.
Right. Now, you know, we all watched, you know, the Olympics, a lot of us did, you know, recently. And, you know, the whole thing with Simone Biles, you know, dropping out when she thought she just wasn't quite ready. What did you learn from that whole episode there with Simone? How do you think she handled it? What are some of the lessons learned there about, you know, when people are in these in super intense competitive situations?
Yeah. So I applaud Simone. You know, it takes a lot of courage, no matter which stage of competition you're at. It takes a lot of courage to say, this is the sport I love. And at this point, at this very moment, this is not the healthy option for me. Right. And it's incredibly difficult, I'm sure, to do that at the Olympics. Obviously, never having been there myself, I can't speak exactly to what that feels like, but I imagine that's enormous pressure representing your country and your team and being like, this is not something that's in my best interest at this time is, I would assume, is extremely difficult, right?
Right. Oh, for sure. do you advise, you know, students then to speak up? And it's not just coaches and parents making these decisions. You know, the student needs to speak their minds.
Absolutely. And that self-advocacy is another skill that's learned, right? We have to, as the kids grow, we have to teach them to take more and more ownership of their sport and their situation. But again, that doesn't happen like overnight, right? You can't just say, hey, this is yours, own it. If they've never had control or had to advocate for themselves, that's not a skill set they have quite yet. So that's learned through the process and with the help of coaches and parents. So, you know, obviously at this stage in her career, Simone has her mentors and her, you know, confidence and stuff like that. And I'm sure she kind of worked through that decision with them. But as everybody saw, you know, she is at a point where she can advocate for herself and say, this is in my best interest. And that's a skill that she would have had to develop through her time in sport.
Right. Yeah. I agree with your assessment. You know, there's so much to admire about her in many ways over a long period of time. So amazing person. So on the parent front, you know, there's a lot of parents who listen, you know, to this podcast, and we've been all, when we grew up, you know, we saw parents kind of get, you know, out of hand, you know, from the stands or just, you know, just getting too much into the competitive angle. Any advice for parents here in terms of how they should be interacting with coaches and other student players and their own kids?
Yeah. So I think, you know, I think there's a couple different things to think about with that. And I think that the reality is, at the end of the day, every parent has to recognize that the chance that their athlete becomes the next Michael Phelps or the next Simone Biles or the next, you know, I think the acronym is GOAT now, is extremely small. And so when entering into any athletic team or athletic routine, you have to set out your goals, right? What do I want my kid to get out of this? What am I hoping that they learn? Or what am I hoping that they're connected to because of their time in sport? And so, you know, as a parent, identifying what your goals are for your kid, right? And that's maybe the life lessons, centered around the life lessons, or it's centered around the physical or mental health aspects. But knowing that your child has to be able to fall in love with the sport to be great at it is something to keep in mind. And as you interact with coaches, unless you're an expert in the field of, you know, basketball or gymnastics or whatever your child is competing in, keep in mind that your coach has gone through some sort of training, right? And that training has varying levels at each sport, right? The higher up you go, the more knowledge, expertise, and training that your coach has likely done. And so unless as a parent, you've gone through those trainings, keep in mind that your coach does have some sort of education. Even at the recreational level, they've gone through some sort of coach training to try and be their best for your kid. Speaking as a coach, we don't do it for us, right? And so keeping that in mind when you're a parent advocating for your child or interacting with a coach who's working with your child, I think is really important. As far as interacting with, you know, other parents or other athletes on teams, I think remembering to model the behavior that you would want to see from your child down the road. If a teammate's getting more playing time or whatever, the way you react to that situation should be how you would want your child to react to that situation when they're in your shoes. Our kids are sponges. They soak up everything around them. And so if you would want your child to handle that situation with grace, as you look from the outside, remember to handle that with grace as you tackle, you know, what you might see as unfair playing time or, you know, whatever the case may be. Remember to interact with your child's teammates and parents of those teammates with grace, because your kid will respond accordingly.
Right, right. What's your advice for parents who want to appeal a decision a coach makes or feels that a coach is not doing a good job for some reason? What's the right way to go about, you know, parents, you know, looking into whether the coach is doing the right thing?
Yeah, so I would say first step would be emailing or asking to set up a meeting time. A lot of times, you know, coaches are either moving on to work with their next group or they're, you know, they have another job or, you know, it's very rare that this is their sole source of income or the only thing or only group that they're working with, right? And so asking for a good time to meet or setting up a meeting time later in the week when both it's convenient for both the parent schedule and the coach's schedule, I would say would be step one. And that does a couple things. It shows you're respectful of your child's coach's time, that you're planning ahead and you're asking for an appropriate time to sit down and have a conversation. The second thing I think it does is it helps to separate some of the emotion and lets you help center back on the facts of what's happening, right? I'm seeing this and it's making my kid feel this way. What can we do? And center back on solutions, right? How can we make this? How can I help my child work through this? How can I, you know, help my child to be in a better position for whatever decision was made? You know, if it's a playing time decision, how do I help my child be better so they can earn more playing time? Or how do I help my child cope with not getting as much playing time, right? Have a solution in mind and ask and brainstorm with your coach through that process. So set up the meeting time to show your respect for their time and their dedication to the craft. And secondly, like, try and take that meeting time until you meet to separate the emotion, write down the facts, and have a clear objective in mind. Hey, I'm trying to do this. How can we work together to make this the best experience for my child, whether that's through learning something or through being better prepared the next time around?
Right, right. So in researching information about youth sports in preparation for our podcast today, I came across the fact that, you know, the number one cause of death for college athletes is heart conditions. What advice do you have for parents who think their kids might have some heart issue and how that, you know, should impact their playing in school sports?
Yeah, definitely. It's scary for sure. And I think, you know, it's scary to think that kids who are so active, can still be at risk for heart conditions. Right. And you see these kids that are otherwise the model of great health, and you hear of these incidents happening. And I think the biggest thing that we've learned is the importance of, even if your kid is, you know, doesn't break an arm or doesn't, you know, have an upset stomach or, you know, you have no other reason to take them to the doctor that would be alarming, the importance of taking them to the doctor for their regular checkup to make sure that their doctor is listening to their heart when they're doing their physical, right? Don't just because your child's a cross country runner doesn't mean that their heart's super healthy. You know, there could be an underlying condition there, and sometimes that can only be caught by listening. The other thing I think is creating that safe space for your child to come to you with any complaints or issues, right? Whether it's they feel like their heart flutters when they work really hard and it's explainable, right? It's, oh, okay, well, we're maybe getting a little nervous, or, hey, no, that shouldn't be happening that way. When you're just walking around, your heart shouldn't flutter like that. We need to go see a physician. But creating that space where your child feels comfortable either talking to you as the parent or bringing it to their coach, like, hey, I'm concerned about this. This is weird and it doesn't feel right. But being under the regular surveillance of a physician, even if they seem otherwise healthy, is really important.
Right. So the family doctor, a key part of the team here. So if your student athlete is participating in rigorous sports, your doctor's got to know about it, right?
Oh, absolutely. He's my primary care now, but he was my pediatrician all growing up. And we got to know him very well, you know, aches and pains and bruises and broken bones and a bajillion things later through my own athletic career, let alone my siblings' athletic careers. He's heard it all, right? And being able to communicate with him, most everybody now has a way to message their doctor through, you know, an app or online system. And so making sure that they know that you're participating in sport is really important. But then keeping them up to date, like, hey, I had this happen. Should I be concerned or not? And whether that's going in through a visit or a virtual message, but communicating and using that resource, because your coach likely doesn't have a medical degree, right? A lot of times parents obviously don't have medical degrees. And so use the expert in the field. Don't guess, right? If you're unsure, just ask.
Right. Yeah. So certain sports have more injuries, I suppose, than others. Like gymnastics, is it the case that has a super high injury rate? How should parents think about, you know, what's right for kids? In, you know, concussions and football and such. What's your view on the whole issue of the likelihood of injuries occurring when in certain types of sports?
Yeah, I think there's a risk for injury in any sport, right? We can see swimming, right? Low impact, super low rate for collision with anybody. And yet you'll still see swimmers who need shoulder surgery, or, you know, they need hip surgery or knee surgery, or, you know, and you wouldn't think that maybe from swimming laps back and forth. So I think any sport's going to have some sort of risk. And I think at the end of the day, when you're kind of going back and forth between the benefits and the risks, I think you need to look at, again, as we discussed earlier, what are you trying to get out of this, right? What is your goal for your child by putting them on their first soccer team, right? You want, as we talked about earlier, you want them to have a group of friends. You want them to be active. You're looking for all these things. And yes, the most important thing is your child's health and safety and well-being. But the chances that those happen are not nothing, right? Everybody at some point typically has some sort of injury, whether it's a sprained ankle or something more severe like a concussion. But I think you need to, again, look at why did you enroll in sport? What was the goal here? And I'm not saying you throw the injuries out the window, but I think if you monitor them properly, they can be addressed before they get out of hand and where you're looking at a very serious issue a lot of times.
So, I mean, parents are in the best position to determine what might be best for their kids. I mean, so some kids might want all the benefits of team activities and physical activity and so forth, but don't want to be in the most competitive portion of that sport, while other kids want to, you know, be the ultimate competitor. It is the case that kids and parents need to think about how intense level of competition do they really want to be in? Because I take it is there a direct correlation between, you know, the sophistication or the intensity level or the competitive level and injury rates?
Yeah, I don't know that direct correlation, but I would say that, you know, injuries are accidents, right? No child or coach or parent goes into a situation going, yep, I'm going to get hurt here, right?
Right.
You will see injuries at all levels of play. Obviously, some more severe than others, but I think they're all accidents. And so I think it's hard to say that just because you're playing a competitive sport, you're more likely to get injured. But I do think that there's more training that's involved in a competitive sport typically. There's more competition that's typically there. And so there's more touch points per se, where in a recreation setting, if you're practicing twice a week, the chances that you get hurt in that week are lower than someone who practices five times a week, right? So with less touch points, you have less opportunities to get hurt. But I think the chances for injury would be the same if you broke it down on a per touch point basis.
I see. Yeah. So I studied Shotokan karate for many years, and that's a contact sport there. But you're absolutely right. I had a teacher who was very concerned right up front about injury. And so if you learn how to practice properly and how to stay in shape so you minimize injuries, there's definitely things you can do to drive down the injury rates for sure, right?
Oh, 100%. Prevention, mobility, you know, getting enough sleep, all of those things don't make the injury risk zero, but they definitely help to protect your body and use those natural defenses that your body has to protect itself from injury.
Right. Say a little bit more, though, about concussions. You know, we read about that all the time these days in, you know, pro football. What about the concussion risk, you know, at the high school and college level?
It's the same. I would say that, you know, it's really scary that our high school and college athletes that have brains that are still developing are at risk for such serious injuries. But the risk is still there, and it's very serious. And, you know, specifically here in California, sports coaches have to take a concussion training. You know, U.S. soccer requires all of its coaches and officials to take concussion training. I feel like through the last 5 to 10 years, it's obviously always been an issue, but it's now at the forefront of everybody's attention, and everybody's trying to do what they can to identify concussion symptoms early to protect our kids' brains. I always tell kids, like, you can get your shoulder fixed. You can get your knee fixed. Not that we ever want them to have to, but you can. You only get one brain. And to protect our kids' lives and their brains and their futures is super important. And so it's a team effort, to do that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. In NFL, you know, pro football, you know, they've rolled out these elaborate concussion protocols and such that are, you know, mandatory under certain kinds of collisions. Has that rolled into college and high school levels where there's these, you know, lots of attention to potential, you know, concussions?
Absolutely. So the NCAA has its own concussion protocol that each campus athletics program has sports medicine staff. And so those sports medicine staff are responsible for carrying out the concussion protocol under the supervision of the team physician or an outside physician. And so there's, you know, concussion baseline testing that happens for most NCAA athletes, NAIA athletes as they arrive on campus, pre-participation. So before practices start, they go through like a baseline testing. In the event that something does occur, they can go back to that baseline testing and use it as a gauge for where you are in recovery. And then at the high school level, you know, each high school has its own different protocols. I think we're starting to see more athletic trainers that are employed by high schools. Specifically here in the Sacramento area, I can speak to three high schools that I know within the 5-mile radius that have a full-time sports medicine staff member that is responsible for, you know, all sorts of injuries for athletes, but specifically in making sure that they're safe to return after a concussion. But you also will still see some schools that just don't have an athletic trainer or don't have the resources for that. And so, you know, if a student athlete leaves with a head injury, the CIF requires that they go through certain checks and balances to return to play before they're allowed back out on the field. But there's a little bit more variance in the high school level just because each school has different sets of resources. So, yeah, you're going to kind of see a little bit more there, but the NCAA is very straightforward in how it handles return to play after concussions.
Right, right. Very good. So what about, you know, the issues of doping and substance abuse? Do you see that going up or down? I mean, do you see it in high schools too, as well as in college? Or is it, what's been your experience with that whole set of issues and challenges?
Yeah, it's a scary thing. having sat through a number of USADA presentations through my time as a coach, it's scary to realize, like, sometimes you don't actually know what you're putting in your body. Even though it says it's good for you, doesn't necessarily mean it's cleared for competition. And so, yeah, it's kind of a crazy thing to think that some of these, you know, whether it's a caffeine thing that you stick in your water so you can, you know, have a little bit of caffeine, like this isn't banned, but like, for example, like a Crystal Light powder, you know, there's types of those that aren't allowed, and I'm not using the Crystal Light brand to say that it is or isn't cleared, but like that type of a powder where you add it into your water and shake it up, and some of those additives aren't on the safe list. And so it's like, that's not really performance enhancing, but it's not cleared, right? And so it's considered doping at that time. But there's just a huge list of things that do add to an athlete's performance. And I think it's starting to be more widely spoken about. I think that USADA at the club and national levels has done a phenomenal job of making presentations understandable by youth parents and athletes. They've done a really great job of enlisting, you know, interns to put this into relatable contexts. They've done a great job of reaching out at the grassroots level to make sure that coaches and athletes are getting the information or that it's available to them. But unfortunately, I think you will still see parents that maybe their kid doesn't know better, but they definitely know better, and they're looking for that edge. And so I think it's still an issue. But hopefully that knowledge of what is and isn't allowed and how you can check to see if something is or isn't allowed before you give it to your child is more at hand now. So I think that we're going to start to see a decrease in that, but you're always going to have people that think they're going to slip by and are just looking for that leg up, which is unfortunate and has no place in sport for sure.
Interesting. So you're saying it's not necessarily crystal clear, you know, speaking of Crystal Light, I mean, you're saying that there's a lot of things that are okay and a lot of things that aren't. And sometimes you're saying people, you know, by accident end up taking a prohibitive enhancing nutrition of some type.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the crazy thing, as I've learned through sitting through so many of these presentations. You know, there are certain types of medications, things that are prescribed by physicians that aren't allowed, and you need to apply for an exception to use it. And of course, they're not going to tell you that you can't use medicine, that you need to be healthy, right? Like asthma is one of those things. You know, certain types of ADHD medication are banned substances. You know, you could go down the list of different diagnoses that have certain types of medication that are quote unquote banned, but if you follow the proper procedures, they're allowed because they're needed, right? They're needed for that athlete's health and safety and well-being. And it's not being used as a performance enhancing drug of any kind. It's actually medically prescribed for this athlete. So you get into those types of things where you need to know that this is on the ban list and that you need to follow the protocols to make sure the paperwork is filed so that if your athlete is drug tested, and we're talking about drug tested at a higher level, right? Whether it's higher level club competition or NCAA competition or, you know, high level high school competition, that's when your athlete would get tested. We're not seeing like rec level kids get tested, but to know that those exceptions are needed at higher level of competition is important. And then the second thing that we'll see is like certain types of you know, vitamin mixes and things like that have, if you can't break down the ingredients, then the chances that something is banned, is in that ban list in that type of supplement that you're taking is higher, right? Sometimes if you look at the back of supplements, it'll say like, and proprietary blend, right? And right. If you can't name everything that's in that proprietary blend, and I'm not going to say that every proprietary blend has something that's banned, right? But you as an athlete or you as a parent of an athlete are responsible for what you put in your child's body. And ignorance is not an excuse for that, especially when this information is so available. Right. You need to know what you're giving your child and know whether it's on that ban list or not.
Now, the folks who are in charge of putting together the list of banned substances, is it, you know, steroids obviously have, you know, a lot of negative impact on your health. And so, you know, I guess one of the reasons to ban certain substances is because it's simply bad for you. And then I guess another reason to do it is because it's a form of cheating, I suppose. Are those the two reasons why some type of substance shows up, you know, on the ban list?
Yeah. And then I think you see the people who genuinely forgot to fill out the exception list, right? They have a prescription from a physician and they just didn't fill out the list, and it is prescribed and it is needed. And you get the accidents, you get the ones who didn't look into what they were putting in their body. And then of course you're going to have those cases of cheating. So I think you're looking at a couple different situations, and it's hard to tell which is which, I'm sure. And I do not envy those who have to make those decisions. But I think ultimately, you know, we've seen time and time again, the athletes are responsible for what goes into their body. And so, as a parent of a youth athlete, you are responsible for knowing what is being given to your child at all times. And so, teaching your child how to navigate that on their own post, you know, youth sports is an important life lesson, for parents to work with their kid on. But I think ultimately it is on the parent and the child to figure out what is going into their body at all times.
Right. Well, Adriana, I have a couple of final questions for you, but is there some topic here that we haven't brought up that you think is important to raise?
I think we talked a lot about the benefits of youth sports, and as someone who is involved with youth sports, like, I obviously think that the benefits are immense, and I think that they're phenomenal, and I think that kids learn so much and grow so much from sport. But I think that there are some things that parents and coaches should look out for with our youth athletes to make sure that they're getting the most out of their experience, and making sure that, you know, they are staying healthy while participating in sport, if that's all right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Sure. So I think, you know, we have to look out for overtraining. Doing too much to your body before it can recover is a scary thing. And making sure that your child's following a periodized training plan is important. Because we want them to be tired, but we don't want them to be at the point of breaking, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. I remember in martial arts training, you know, listen to your body, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And teaching kids how to do that, right? Because they are going to be tired and they are going to be sore, and teaching them what that boundary of healthy growth is, and when, and the importance of recovery in that healthy growth, as well as like, okay, this is too much. You have gone too far and you're not being kind to your body, is how I phrase it to my athletes.
Right. Let's see. So just a couple of wrap up questions here. There's a lot to research here. So for parents and student athletes who are listening to the podcast, what are some of your recommendations on how they can do some of their own research on, you know, what sport might be best for their kids? You know, the whole issue of performance enhancing substances, how to interact with coaches. How can people, you know, do the research and educate themselves on some of these key topics?
Yeah. So I think as far as choosing a sport, I think, see what your child's interested in. That's, my parents let me do everything. I did everything from gymnastics to swimming to soccer to volleyball, you know, anything and everything I wanted to try until I found my thing I was allowed to do, right? And I wasn't allowed to drop things in the middle of seasons. I wasn't allowed to jump from sport to sport without completing my commitments, which I think was an important thing for me to learn at a young age. But I was allowed to try things once my commitments were finished. And later at 12, 13 years old, I found my thing, which ended up being swimming. But I was allowed to try so many things that I didn't have any regrets once I had chosen my sport. I was sure that swimming was my thing and that I loved and that I was going to be the most successful at. So I think that's important to listen to your child and see what they love. My dad is an avid soccer fan, so I'm sure he would have loved for me to land on soccer, but he allowed me that space to find what I truly loved. So that's my best advice for parents on that. As far as, you know, the banned substance list, you can Google, USADA drug list, and it's going to take you to USADA.org, and you have tons of resources on there. You can, you know, look at that list. That list is actually going to be different slightly from the NCAA banned substance list. So I encourage anybody who's looking into being a college athlete, towards their junior, senior year, start educating yourself on the NCAA banned substance list, because that does vary slightly from USADA's. But, you know, Google it. And then, you know, as far as talking to coaches, I think, remember that they're people. And so any way that you would address a conflict or confusing topic with a coworker is a good start for how you should approach your child's coach. These are people at the end of the day, whether they're athletes or coaches or officials, they're people. And so remembering that, yes, it is sport and yes, it's exciting and there's a lot of passion, but at the end of the day, these are just people. And so however you would interact with people is going to be your best bet.
Right. Okay. My final question, saving the most important question for the end, nutrition. In reading a little bit of, about your background and on some of your bios, I think on one of your bios, it indicated that you love chocolate chip cookies. Now, I was so happy to see that because I absolutely love chocolate and chocolate chip cookies. So as a sort of final piece of advice for folks, student athletes don't have to give up everything that tastes good, right?
Oh my goodness, no. you know, I think everything, like everything, nutrition is about finding balance. And I think that, you know, I talked about modeling behavior earlier. And so, you know, parents, model the behavior that you want to see from your kids, whether that's, you know, in your sleep habits or their nutrition. Like, make sure that the words that you use and the actions that you demonstrate model healthy behaviors that you want to see in your child, right? If you're talking about abstaining from, you know, carbs, remember the impact that that's going to have on your youth athlete. If you're, you know, worried about sweets, you know, remember that your kid is soaking that up too, and then that they're going to develop a fear of having a chocolate chip cookie, you know. And at the end of the day, like everything in life, it's about balance and finding that perfect balance to fuel yourself for performance, while making sure that you enjoy it. Because if you don't enjoy it, you're not going to stick to it. And so making sure that your child is enjoying what they're eating while making sure that they fuel their body for recovery and for the sport that they love.
Nice. Great. Well, Adriana Contreras, lots of great information here today. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I had fun.
I want to thank you for listening to today's Fight Back podcast. Our mission is to provide you with the healthcare resources and information in a refreshing and interesting format. I also want to thank Adriana for sharing with us her experiences and insights into the benefits of being a student athlete, of which there are many, and how parents can help foster a healthy and productive experience for their children's athletic pursuits. For more information, please visit our website at www.healthcareconsumerrights.org. While on our website, you can check out additional podcasts or access more information and resources to help you navigate our healthcare system and get the care you deserve. We also welcome your input and stories that we can use on future podcasts. This is Steve Poizner, and this is Fight Back, a podcast by the Healthcare Consumer Rights Foundation. Thanks for listening. I look forward to our next podcast. Talk with you soon.